Everyone, it's your old friend Ariel Helwani on this Wednesday, May 29th, 2019. Welcome back to a brand new episode of the MMA Reporters. My whole schedule, my whole universe feels like it's out of whack because I just did the Monday show yesterday, Tuesday, because we were off Monday. And so usually there's a day in between, but here we are talking again. And this is very exciting. And I'm excited about today's show. And I will tell you about today's show in a matter of moments, but I just want to say, because I mentioned this on the Tuesday show, but since we last spoke, I was telling you that we just had a few more tickets left for our live show, our Helwani road show, if you will, June 7th in Chicago. Well, I am very proud to share with all of you that the show is sold out. Our first ever Helwani road show sold out June 7th, Lincoln Hall in Chi-Town, the night before UFC 238. I will tell you more about what you can expect if you bought tickets. And I can't thank you enough for buying tickets. A lot of you have reached out. Are you coming to Vegas? Are you coming to Edmonton? Are you coming to Anaheim? More on that in the future. Wanted to get the first one out of the way. I'll give you the lineup in the future as well. But I just wanted to say thank you to everyone who bought tickets for the support. It means the world to me. I truly can't thank you enough. I'm really excited about this. So wanted to get that out of the way. And I also want to tell you that if you aren't going to be in Chicago, if you aren't going to be attending, if you are sad that you didn't get tickets, we will actually be posting the full show on the same feed that you get this show, the Monday show. So you will be able to enjoy and catch the entire road show. Maybe just hours later. Like I'm told, like literally hours later, you know, it'll be close to 2:38, but it will be evergreen as well. So you will enjoy that and get a feel for what it's all about and get excited for the next one. So thank you very much to everyone who supported. Thank you to everyone who continues to download this podcast, the fastest growing podcast. I saw the numbers recently. It's just absolutely amazing. Astronomical numbers. The fastest growing podcast at ESPN. That's what I'm told, at least. You know,
it's incredible.
Right? I mean, I try to be humble about these things, but then, you know, you're told the numbers and you're just sort of like, whoa, this is amazing.
When the numbers are that big, it's hard to be humble. That's, you know.
I agree, Daniel. I agree. Well said. Well said. So one of our signature shows over the past few months, you know, we've been trying out different formats, we've been having different voices, but the response to the time that we had the Warlock in studio, face to face, mano a mano, nose to nose, response was great. And so I have called upon my old friend, the Kung Fu Panda himself, the godfather of British mixed martial arts and boxing media, the godfather of combat sports media in Europe, the godfather of Special Olympics media coverage back in England, in the UK, overseas, Daily Telegraph, Fighters Only, Talk Sport, William Hill, all those places and more. The one and only Gareth A. Davies, back in studio. How are you, sir?
I'm really good, Ariel. Thank you. It's great to be here again. It's always great to be here in Seaport, looking out on the Hudson River across Brooklyn, where we used to go and have meals with you and your wife and your children when you lived there.
Yes.
And our mate John Beer.
Wow.
He's bought a ghost town near Joshua Tree. No, listen, it takes me back always coming here. It was lovely to come last time. I'm delighted for you that you're... Is it a theater you've sold out in Chicago?
Like a hall.
Was it, what, 300, 500?
200.
Brilliant, yeah. Brilliant. No, I wanted to do the same myself for people like Aaron Chalmers, because I think people love live stuff they can come to. And imagine you'll have fighters on stage and
yes,
people telling stories. And yeah, I think it's lovely to do those kind of events, because we often find ourselves in rooms like this, is a beautiful little recording studio, or we find ourselves in front of a poster speaking to people one-on-one, or in a media room, or in a fight event. But it's quite nice to disseminate and have the nerves in front of a live audience, and it'll be great fun for you, and I'm sure it'll go very, very well indeed.
Thank you, Gareth.
Just to correct you on one thing.
Yes.
I have covered Special Olympics, but it's Paralympics that I do a lot of.
Okay.
I'm going to my 8th Paralympic Games, Summer Games, in Tokyo in 2020. But Special Olympics tends to be more Down syndrome.
Okay.
But Paralympics, of course, is 5 different disability groups, with blind or sighted or partially sighted, les autres, wheelchair, amputee.
Okay.
And I can't remember the other one right now.
All right.
I wonder if you can think of what it is. Cerebral palsy.
Okay. Well, I apologize.
Nothing wrong. I mean, it was an amazing introduction. Thank you very
much.
It's great to be here. Look,
well,
you and I are old pals, and we rattled 45 minutes before we even started this, and I think that would have made a decent podcast.
Well, I kept telling you, save it for the show, save it for the show.
Exactly.
Because I don't want to waste the good stuff, but you were made for a medium like this, like your voice, your demeanor, your delivery.
Do you want some poetry?
You got something?
Yeah. Out, out, brief candle. No, we don't want Shakespeare today. Let's have a bit of, what about the Jabberwocky? "'Twas brillig and the slithy toves did gyre and gimble in the wabe." Although, listen, all those MMA fanboys will be getting bored by my poetry voice by now. But the thing is, it's lovely. Listen, podcasting, as you say, very fast growing. Everyone's got their phones stuck in their ears when they're traveling now. People like to use their time to travel. People used to read a newspaper or a novel, didn't they, on their way to work, to the gym, while they were in their own private world. And a lot of us spend time now, we're in the back of a cab for 40 minutes, we're on an aeroplane. People love things that they can connect with. We're wired for connection as human beings. It's why we love fighters, because they're extraordinarily wired, and we like to see their wiring, and we get to see it in public. And that's why I think, you know, the audio, the aural medium is so vast and so growing. Listen, the first noise that was ever made by man was the scream, "I am." And, you know, who doesn't love birdsong in the morning? You know, that podcasting, I think, will be enormous. Podcasting will be enormous as we go on.
What brings you back to New York?
I'm here for a big fight at Madison Square Garden on Saturday night. Anthony Joshua, the British heavyweight, who is undefeated in 22 fights, defending the IBF, WBA and WBO heavyweight titles against a Mexican-American from Imperial near Mexicali on the Mexican border, Andy Ruiz Jr., is a late replacement for a guy called Jarrell Miller, who's from just over the river here.
Last time you were on, the news just broke.
That's right. He tested positive in three separate tests for some really heinous drugs, EPO, and stuff like that. You know, which really, really bad drugs that you can
only
inject.
How long will he be away for?
Well, I don't know. He wasn't licensed at the time, which he's got away with a lot there. But it was so kind of just foolish, you know, to do that. But obviously Anthony Joshua's headlining. It's his American debut. They want to know if he can conquer the US market. This is a guy, I remember, who sold out 80 and 90 four times in a row, stadiums in Cardiff and London. He's a huge star in the UK, but can he break into this very crowded, US market with sports entertainment, film, all the music here? That it's a very crowded environment. You know, I did some vox pops for William Hill the last couple of days around Madison Square Garden. I went to a great neighborhood in Queens, a Mexican-Colombian neighborhood last night. I had a few margaritas, spoke to people on the street, had some nachos and guacamole, and it was fantastic. And asking people about what it would mean to have a first Mexican-American heavyweight champion of the world, because there hasn't been a Mexican heavyweight champion of the world. Listen, it's a great time because there are loads of British fighters coming over to America. So many more boxers than mixed martial artists, to be honest, to mention mixed martial arts on this podcast of yours, because last time we talked a lot of boxing. And
No. Well, there's a lot of connections there. I was just curious, how are ticket sales?
Well, I don't think when Joshua fights, it tends to be the Joshua show, a bit like when Conor McGregor fought, it was the Conor McGregor show. And when he was fighting, let's hope he comes back soon. I know we're going to talk about that a little today. But the thing is with Anthony Joshua, he's such a crossover star in the UK. They believe 10,000 Brits will come to the Garden on Saturday night. But he's just got to make a statement against a guy who's...
Will it sell out?
I don't know. I doubt it.
He sells 80,000 tickets. Like, yeah. Why even come here? Does he have to come here?
Well, because the other side, the rivals to ESPN, the digital rivals to ESPN, have seen him as one of their tentpole figures, along with people like Saul Canelo Alvarez, Gennady Golovkin, and Bellator, for example.
Yeah.
They're trying to grow their fan base in terms of their subscriptions. They see him as a potential star for America. Some people say he's going to be. I'm not sure he does. I think America likes a bad boy when it comes to a fight leader, to one of those guys who's like a pathfinder. Floyd Mayweather, Mike Tyson. They love the guy that can play the bad boy.
Yeah.
And I do think they become bigger stars as a result. Deontay Wilder's on the cusp of doing that.
Well, look at Conor McGregor.
Well, we were exactly. About
every time he did something, you know, that ruffled feathers, that was illegal, criminal, he becomes more famous. And I think that speaks to what you were just saying.
They say no, all publicity is good publicity. And
right.
In that realm, it works.
You know what drives me nuts? We may have talked about this last time, but I don't think so on air. It drives me nuts when people tell me like, oh man, boxing is dead. Boxing is dead. Boxing isn't interesting anymore. I remember the old days of boxing. You cover both sports very closely. Which sport is healthier right now, boxing or mixed martial arts?
Well, I think in Britain, boxing is enormous at the moment. You know, we have double figures world champions. We have a lot of rising stars. There's a lot of interest in it. Every single major broadcast channel does fight sports, particularly boxing. Mixed martial arts, we're 7 to 10 years behind you in Europe and in the UK. In the UK, apart from maybe Poland with KSW, is enormous. But apart from Poland, MMA is still a very long way behind boxing, how it reaches news editors, radio editors, the platforms that the influencers or the people in influence really follow. So I think you have to look at it regionally at the moment, and I think MMA is growing. Bellator's trying to put its oar in the UK in a really big way. We spoke about this last time. They've got a Sky Sports deal, which is the equivalent of ESPN over there. Sky Sports has its rolling news channel like ESPN Sports Center. So it's a very influential, you know, it captures the zeitgeist, doesn't it? ESPN Sports Center. It's on in every bar. We see it everywhere. When you're on there and you know you're breaking news, it's that kind of nerve moment, isn't it? Your heart rate goes up a little bit, doesn't it, Ariel?
Yeah,
because
yeah, yeah.
You know, I got to deliver here in my 72 seconds. I know they said 43 just now, so I've got to deliver my news piece right. in 43 seconds because the whole world or the world of
sure.
America, the continent is watching it. And it's like that in the UK. And I think, boxing is big because of Anthony Joshua. It's big because of Tyson Fury. It's big because of Dillian White. It's big because our heavyweights are big at the moment. We've got 6 of the top 10 heavyweights in the world from the UK. We've got rising stars in that division coming up and everyone else besides. Conor McGregor has got the brakes on at the moment. He was being a great star at the time in the UK as well because he was loved by the UK audience. But I think when you come to America, my straw poll, my vox popation of America is that mixed martial, people will know names in mixed martial arts much more than they will from UFC stars than they will boxers right now.
Mm.
People know Mayweather, people know Mike Tyson, they kind of know Manny Pacquiao, but beyond that, they don't really know Deontay Wilder. It's my experience.
I think it's starting to change a little bit. I think the ratings have been very good as of late. I mean, his knockout was viral. Everyone was talking about it.
But it's the crossing into the mainstream.
Sure.
The Jimmy Kimmel shows.
Sure, But I think it's starting to happen. The thing is, it feels like boxing always goes the way the heavyweight division goes. And when the heavyweight division is
no,
up.
Correct.
And right now, it's pretty damn high.
There's a saying, though, that there's boxing and there's heavyweight boxing.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Remember, 1971, just down the road, Madison Square Garden, Muhammad Ali and Joe Frazier, both
March 8th.
March 8th, 1971, both unbeaten at the time. $2.5 million they were earning each, and it was called the richest prize in sport at the time.
Mm.
Every man and his dog, every granny, every grandchild knew that Muhammad Ali and Joe Frazier were fighting. We had another era with Mike Tyson, Evander Holyfield, Lennox Lewis, Riddick Bowe, you know, George Foreman coming back as well. Since then, there hasn't been this period till now, but the best need to fight the best.
Well, that was my question.
That's the thing.
So the thing about boxing is the best can fight the best if they all get on the same page and the egos and the splits and all that. In MMA, if you're fighting for the UFC, there's pretty much no chance that you're going to fight against a Bellator fighter. Now, we have seen as of late, in a couple of weeks, we'll have Kyoji Horiguchi coming to Madison Square Garden to fight Darion Caldwell. Even this weekend, on a smaller scale, but you've got Jin Yu Frey, who's the Invicta champion, fighting Ayaka Hamasaki in Ryzen. So you have Invicta versus... So you have smaller level, but you'll never see... Remember when Chuck Liddell went to Pride and fought Rampage Jackson, fought Alistair Overeem? Dana White did it then, but never did it ever again. You'll never see that. And so boxing has to... It cannot, in my opinion, go back to the days where the best weren't fighting the best, because it felt like they were trying to gain the audience back over the last few years, and I think they're slowly doing that. But if Joshua and Wilder and Fury don't fight each other, this will be bad for boxing, right?
It's really bad for boxing, but
I saw Wilder announce yesterday, oh, I'm fighting Luis Ortiz. No one wants to see that.
Well, I was there at the fight last year in Brooklyn.
No one wants to see that, right?
Well, it was a great fight first time around.
That's the fight we want to see.
Exactly. Luis Ortiz is an older guy, tricky southpaw. He gave Deontay Wilder problems for 7 rounds, and then he banjoed him with a brilliant uppercut in the 10th round, I think it was, to finish him. Here's the thing. The reason why this has happened right now is that, you know, the company you work for and the rivals, they're both in a digital marketing war for subscribers. Mm. And what's happened is Tyson Fury's been signed. You had him on your show, didn't you? Ariel Helwani's MMA show.
Thank you.
Tyson calls me Russell Crowe, by the way. He's always called me Russell Crowe. He's an amazing character. Was he in the studio with
you?
No. You having him on the screen?
Yeah.
Well, he's an amazing character, yeah. Isn't he? He's just one of those incredible figures. And when you meet him in person, he's such a big man. He barely fit in this room, yeah? ESPN saw something in him. Top Rank saw something in Bob Arum. He's come to this platform. Anthony Joshua is being, as I said at the top of the show, is being taken to the other platform. They're rivals. I don't know if ESPN and DAZN would come together and do a show at the moment because they're such big rivals in the early stages of rivalry digitally.
It's a fascinating time but
the bottom line with those heavyweights, and I'll just finish because I'm blathering on, the bottom line with those heavyweights is they're being paid vast sums which wouldn't happen in MMA.
Right.
Regardless of the pay-per-view figures or the subscription figures, they are earning tens of millions of dollars for fighting quarterfinals and semifinals, not the final.
Yeah.
And that's the problem. And while that money's available, they won't come together and they will build and build and
build.
Let
me ask you, like this guy Andy Ruiz, right? How much does he make?
Yeah, I think he's making $3 million from this fight.
$3 million.
6 weeks ago, Ariel, he didn't know he was even having the fight. He was beating up a Russian called Dimitrenko, yeah? Knocking him out in 5 rounds. 11 months ago, he was fighting a journeyman in his last fight for Bob Arum, and he earned $30,000.
That's wild for me because, like, Daniel Cormier is just sniffing $3 million at this stage of his career.
No, but it's different.
Why?
Because there's a bigger reach for boxing. The fight league doesn't promote it as much. The pay scale is completely different. I mean, I think MMA fighters are vastly underpaid.
Do you think we'll ever see the day that they rival boxers in terms of their purses?
Well, they do already. Some of them do.
The top 1%.
Yeah.
The Andy Ruiz's of the world in MMA are not making $3 million.
Well, Andy Ruiz, remember, has earned $500,000 before. He's earned $200,000.
But I'm saying the equivalent to him in MMA is not getting anywhere near that.
The equivalent to him in MMA is like Derek Lewis getting the fight with Daniel Cormier.
He's not getting that.
No, of course he isn't. But the thing is, Anthony Joshua, as we say, is a big star. It's a different the whole algorithm of boxing, the whole model of boxing is different. Because what the broadcasters are trying to do with boxing is reach that old audience again, yeah, that was there, that is now really an MMA audience, I've got to say. I think the modern fight audience. I don't understand why fight audiences, when you get a big fight, when you get a Wilder against a Joshua, when you get a Wilder against a Fury, how brilliant was that last year?
Oh, yeah.
You know, I got the last hour in his dressing room, Tyson Fury, before he fought Wilder. It was extraordinary.
What access?
It was unbelievable. It's the greatest access I've ever had. It was breathtaking.
Yeah.
No, you know me. I can't be quiet, and I'm not a shrinking lily, you know. But I was quiet in the corner. Frank Warren, Freddie Roach, Ricky Hatton, Ben Davison, Tyson Fury getting wrapped up, his family there, and him coming over. And at one point, who's the country and western star? Chris Stapleton, that was playing.
Okay.
What are you listening to? When a song on the radio station? And then, like, they had all these emotional songs going on. Then Tyson Fury came over and he he's like a giraffe in size. Came and put his head down. He went, "Hey, Russ, what do you think of this music on then before the fight?" And I'm like, "It's amazing. I love it. I love the emotion. I predict a riot was on. We were dancing around. We were all dancing around to it. It was an extraordinary atmosphere." And I just thought,
that to me in a nutshell is why I love combat sports so much. Like that picture that you just painted, I don't care if it's MMA, but it's all the same to me.
It is the same.
It's all the same. I love that. Like the moments before the fight and how you see these men and women just stripped away of everything. They walk in there wearing armor, wearing shields, but they really have none, right? They have nothing. They are at their most simplest form there, and they're so vulnerable in those moments, right? And you see this in their eyes. Like, they're afraid. And we'll talk about a little more on that insight in a second. They're afraid, and then you got to get that access. I've never experienced anything like that. I'm envious.
Well, I know a friend of mine, Tom Hauser, the biographer of Muhammad Ali, has had it many times, and he's requested that.
Beautiful.
Other fighters, I hope to be able to do it more, because afterwards, the nice thing as a writer and a broadcaster is to be able to disseminate that information to other people in a sensitive and accurate and maybe beautiful at times poetic way, because they are very poetic moments. They're very intimate moments. And I do remember, and my recollection, I wrote a column in the Telegraph the next day, and obviously, I got great praise from my head of sport, who said it was like the best piece on in all the Monday papers, because no one else had that access. Like you say.
Beautiful.
But what I remember is everyone's eyes on Tyson Fury for that hour. They're all watching to see if that person's going to change. They're going to crack their mood. And I think it's what's beautiful. It's like it's almost like the family crowding around to see a newborn baby born, or it's a moment. It's a moment where all the focus of everyone in the team, everyone that loves them, everyone that cares for them, is watching them emotionally, physically, psychologically, as they just prepare for that moment in which they are embracing war. You know, we know all the great lines from films like 300, dine well, eat well, for tomorrow we dine in hell. And it's that moment where they are going to pit their wits physically, psychologically, mentally, and putting their lives on the line to fight. And the funny thing is, watching that, I just felt so, I was doing the same thing in the end. And my eyes never left Tyson Fury. They never left him. When he came over and spoke to me, I was just amazed, because he was so present. Mm. That's what I found amazing about him. He enjoyed the music. He was so present. The Jay Diaz, the trainer from the other team, came in to check the gloves, as they're allowed to do the wraps and all those things. The commission came in. It was just wonderful. And I thought, wow, these people are built for this. I didn't see nerves from him, by the way. I saw him tense a little bit. I saw him asking questions, but I didn't see nerves from him. He's a very, very relaxed. Remember, he's from a gypsy culture. Right. He's been fighting since he was little. He's from 10 generations of bare-knuckle fighters. Do you know that?
No.
200 years of fighters in his family. No, he really is a genuine warrior. But he's not a bruising fighter. He is a brilliant boxer who's 6'9" and 18.5 stone. So it's extraordinary. But there are really nervous fighters. And I've spoken to people recently who've said they cannot believe in their access to some of the very biggest names, how nervous fighters get before they go out.
Yeah. Well, and we, you know, we view these fighters, we put them on a pedestal. But it's in those moments, like, I love talking to fighters like 2 days before the fight, because they're cutting weight, they're vulnerable, they're thinking about their own mortality. And I'm reminded, actually, so this weekend, Anthony Smith is fighting Alexander Gustafsson. Have you ever had the chance to speak to Anthony Smith? You would really like him.
No,
like an in-depth conversation.
Yeah, I like his psyche. I like the way he is as
he
a
is
man.
Very,
I mean, I didn't give him any chance against John Jones.
He's one of my
Johnny
favorite
Bones.
Interviews
oh, really?
In the sport right now. Mm. He is so sincere. He is so thoughtful. He is so honest.
He's one
authentic.
Of those present people,
yes.
is it?
Yeah. And so yesterday I spoke to him, and it really like – so I spoke to him right when the fight against Alex was announced, and it was just days after the Jones fight.
Correct.
He told me, he's like, I don't really want to take this fight, but I feel like I have to. I'm not over the John Jones fight. And they're kind of telling me
and
to take
it. And he got schooled
it.
In that fight,
yeah.
didn't he?
You know? And you could tell, like, he was not happy. He was down on himself. He was lacking confidence. And I was like, whoa, someone needs to see this interview and take this fight away from this man. He's going into a fight in Sweden against Alexander Gustafsson. So I spoke to him yesterday, 2.5 months later, and I wanted to know, like, how are you feeling? And two interesting things came from that interview. First, he said, like, look, this is why athletes don't like to tell you guys being the media, the truth. Because I tell you the truth, and then everyone ran with this and was creating a mountain out of a molehill here. And like, look, I was just being honest with you in the moment, but I was going to take the fight. It was okay. But this is why sometimes we lie to you guys. A, I'll get your thoughts on that in a second. But B, he also said, like, I'm embarrassed. I know I'm not getting a title shot if I win on Saturday. I know I'm not getting a number one contender spot. I just got schooled by the champ. But I need to remind myself that I belong here. I'm embarrassed. It's like there's a fire burning inside of me. And I just love, like, at the end of the day, all these fights that we tell people about title shots and number, that's all great. But for a man to just be fighting for his pride, I love that story. That's an amazing story. And so, like, I was sort of taken aback yesterday driving home after speaking to Anthony and hearing his story and just hearing how honest, like, he's not trying to sell me on the fight. He's not trying to sell me on the stakes. He just needs to do this for himself. And I love that.
Yeah, you could also say that there's a certain, you could draw a relaxed focus from that. That obviously he's a natural fighter. I tell you what was coming to mind when you were telling me about that was when, where was I? Was it Chicago or San Jose? My mind is escaping me now. No, I think it was San Jose recently at a Bellator event when Rory McDonald fought
yes.
John Fitch.
Yeah.
And there was an extraordinary interview with Rory McDonald afterwards. It was a beautiful, open.
Beautiful.
I mean, I've tried to get deep interviews with Rory, and I've had 20 minutes, half an hour with him before. And Rory is on the spectrum in terms of talking. He really doesn't want to communicate. He's very closed up. I mean, don't get me wrong. I feel as close as anyone in the media to him because I've interviewed him so many times. I really like him. I've seen him grown up. I speak to Feroz, his coach, a lot. And, you know, I've been around Rory in the UFC and in Bellator, and, you know, I get a lot of access to him. And I think we have to celebrate moments when someone wants to be utterly honest about what's going on in their soul. And that was the moment that Rory McDonald changed as a communicative human being. It was a moment of honesty in which the truth is it's not good to hurt another human being. And he had an epiphany in many ways. Whether he had it in training camp or not, I don't know. But he had it during that fight, where he didn't have the wriggle in him to get away when Fitch put him on the ground. And that's what made it a close fight. In the stand-up, I don't buy the fact he didn't want to hit Fitch because he hit him enough times.
Yeah.
You know, he did really well in the fight. It was arguably a draw, but Fitch was brilliant in it, frankly, for a 42-year-old, I think he is. But when I heard Rory talking like that, I genuinely thought that that was the end of him.
I
now,
did too.
Now, your friend and mine, the bad guy, Ariel, your friend, Chael Sonnen fights, on, June the 14th at Madison Square Garden. And obviously Rory with 6 weeks notice, or 6 weeks, he knows he's fighting in 6 weeks, now has to fight Neiman Gracie at Madison Square Garden that night in the semi-final of the Bellator welterweight tournament. Having said 2 months earlier or 6 weeks earlier, I'm not sure I want to hurt anyone anymore.
How do you feel about that?
I'm slightly concerned, and yeah. I think if he loses, I think that will be the end of his career.
Mm-hmm.
I think if he wins the tournament, it'll be the end of his career. Because I do feel that and this is what we do also see with fighters, and I'm old enough to have, you know, been doing this nearly three decades being around fighters, that you see people grow up. I mean, I remember talking to Randy Couture about how, he loved MMA when it came around because he'd been the alternate for three Olympic Games. He'd been a tough guy in the military, could do anything that anyone else could take physically. Great wrestler, alternate three times at the Olympics. And by the time MMA came around, he was going to fulfill himself as a man because he was so frustrated what life had brought him. He got that in the end, and people change, they mature. I love the maturing of fighters. Something leaves them in the end. You know, look, I'm a grandfather, I'm in my 50s, and, you know, even though people might not look at me, when I played sport and I really committed, but it leaves you eventually. You go back and try and play it sometimes, you think, my God, I am past it. And that's the only time you find out. And I think psychologically sometimes, spiritually, fighters get past it. And I think that's where Rory McDonald is. Mm. Listen, he's getting, he's probably getting $750,000 a fight. So his wife and his wife, they've got small children, is going to say to him, have a couple more fights.
Mm.
You're being paid brilliantly. You're still good at what you do, but you're not the terror you were once.
Right.
Look at the fights with Robbie Lawler. Look what those fights would have done to him. Look what the fight with Musasi would have done to him. The spirit gets diminished, and we see it, we witness it. The spirit of fighters gets diminished. And it does happen, and there comes an end, and there's nothing worse than seeing fighters go on. I love BJ Penn. I love Uriah Faber, you know?
Yeah.
But
just announced his comeback.
Why are these guys fighting on, you know?
Why?
Well, we know why. Because they're getting
money.
A good payday.
Right.
You know?
Although I don't like this Uriah Faber fight, and I'll tell you why. He's fighting a guy named Ricky Simone, who's a youngster, a guy that Chael Sonnen once told me is the best guy in his gym.
That's not good news.
Yeah. And this guy is like 15 years younger than Uriah Faber. and you have Uri Faber coming back in Sacramento.
Is he 3 years away now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
King of Sacramento, right? Give him a tune-up.
Oh, he's one of my favorite guys of all time in MMA.
They're trying to build Ricky Simon off Uriah. I love that Faber. I have no problem with Faber coming back. He's in great shape. He stays
in
shape.
He's always in great shape.
And look, sure he wasn't one of the best when he walked away, but it wasn't like he was getting embarrassed, right? And so you're putting him in there against Ricky Simon, this guy who, let's be honest, no one really knows who he is. You know, the hardcores.
Well, they're using a name to build the guy, aren't
they? But that's not the kind of fight that you put Uriah Faber in right off the bat.
No one forces him to sign the contract. He's doing it because he's getting a decent payday, whether it be new mats in his gym or putting money down on another rental property.
This is like BJ Penn, Yair Rodriguez.
No. Oh, that was terrible. Yeah, yes. Del Pantera against BJ.
It's not going to be the same.
Didn't
because
like that.
BJ isn't Faber right now, or Faber isn't BJ.
Yeah.
And Simone isn't Yair back then. But still, I feel like, as opposed to boxing, like sometimes it's nice to get a tune-up fight. Sometimes it's nice to get a guy's confidence back. You know, you've had a 3-year layoff. Have him fight a Cub Swanson, a guy who's lost 4 or so in a row, a name. Everyone knows Cub Swanson, but he's clearly on the downside of his career. And just have him, do a legend fight. Like, Coker does that, I think, a lot more than the UFC. The UFC says, look, you're in the UFC, you're going to fight the best. It's not true anymore. We had CM Punk fight in the UFC. You know, we've had Greg Hardy fight in the UFC. We've had James Toney fight in the UFC. I wish that they would
I was there that night against Randy.
Yeah, UFC 118.
That was terrible.
I pulled up an article here because I
apparently James Toney had been doing jiu-jitsu training for that fight.
Yeah.
But he looked like a beached whale once he was
King
on the ground.
Yeah. King Mo told me that he submitted him and it was such BS, but it was a great story.
But here's the difference between just on that point, like, if a boxer is past his best and he's being put up against a young fighter, I think depending on the style of this guy that Uriah's fighting, and I don't know
Ricky Simon.
Rich, I don't really know anything about him, I'll be honest with you. If he's a really horrible, dangerous striker with great wrestling, that's what worries me. Because, Uriah is not the best striker in the world, but he's great on the ground. And he's going to be slowed from the years away. As long as it's not a guy that's going to beat him up in the stand up, it could
be quicker. He'll be younger. He'll be fresher.
And he'll be much bigger because they are as they develop with the generations changing.
So I always love the media perspective on all this. And I pulled up an article from the New York Times. The date is December 6th, 1982. I was 5 months old. Mm-hmm. And there's a quote in here that the headline is, Cosell says I've had it. And there's a quote in here from the great Howard Cosell. He says, quote, I was always deeply troubled by boxing. Nothing ever changes. I've done all I can. We've seen the thumbless gloves. We've seen Ernie Shavers and Ray Leonard hurt their eyes. I've seen Benny Perrette and Willie Klassen and Cleveland Denny and Duke Yu Kim die. Yet, we still have this laissez-faire. You've got 2 championships. The networks must take responsibility for that. You've got sleazy promoters. You've got reporters who are afraid to look at boxing. I've had it no more.
And you know why he's saying all that?
Why?
Because he's just finished interviewing Ali, because Ali's finished and slurring, and he's covered his last fight.
So Howard Cosell was the face of boxing.
Well,
media,
he was
right?
The guy that
he
interviewed.
Was the gold standard,
he
yes.
was the guy that interviewed Muhammad Ali sure. more than anyone else. You know, he's the guy that we aspire to in
Absolutely.
Many ways. I don't know if I aspire to him, but
everyone.
He's a name.
It'd be Howard Cosell.
Exactly.
And so he famously turned on boxing. And so I was just curious when you were talking about all of this. Are you ever afraid that you will become somewhat numb to all of this and say, much like what Rory said, maybe watching people get punched isn't the best thing in the world. Like, are you afraid to ever experience what Howard experienced?
No, because I think am I afraid to? No. The beauty of today, there were a few radio stations and probably 3 channels at the time on TV. No one else got to express themselves in those days like thousands of us do now. And I do think, we have to play the game in some ways. Like, I'm a journalist. I write stuff. I write for newspapers. I write online. I write my own stuff on my own website. I do podcasts. I do national radio, live radio. I do things like this with you, like podcasts that are very free form, but they have a certain standard about them. I do betting stuff. I do All kinds of things, and they're all TV, and they're all different platforms, and you act in a different way. But the bottom line is, I try and be as honest and authentic as I can about what I'm seeing. I really care about people fighting. I hate mismatches. I'm up out of my seat screaming at the referee at times. You got to finish this fight now. Stop it now. Because I don't, I've been around people being very badly hurt, and, you know, more in boxing than MMA. And sometimes you do, there's always concern when someone's being administered air after they've been knocked out, when they're not moving for a while, because that is a critical moment. There's a reason there are anesthetists ringside, why there are ambulances ringside, why there are safety procedures, weight checking. We cover inherently dangerous sports. They are unnatural things. Only 2% of the population, if that, is really interested in it, in the mainstay. But obviously people come to the bigger fights. It's a very unusual thing we're talking about. It's not normal to fight people for a living. So I never forget that. And that's why I'm never critical of an Andy Ruiz who looks like what I would call Billy Bunter, like a fat podgy guy, you know, or fat slob, as his ex-promoter Bob Arum called him, because he has the courage. He has the spirit. He's got a Mexican warrior in him, and he fears no one. As he told me, he was fighting men at the age of 12. All the people, the men and women, and they are quite beautiful human beings for their calling. You know, we talked about the privilege of being close to people. You and I have both been around a lot of fighters just after they won, just after they lost, with a microphone, or even just our arms around their shoulders. What people don't realize, we get slagged off on social media for things. We're very close to a lot of fighters. They enjoy us because we're disseminating their lives. Many of them can't speak for themselves in the way that we do. We are professionals at speaking about people, about bringing people out of themselves. And you do grow close. You grow close to people you work with on television. You grow close to people who do radio shows with you. You get to know them as human beings, and you get to see their vulnerabilities. And it's actually a difficult job sometimes, because you don't want to expose them, as you were saying, in that way, as you were saying earlier on. We are in a very rugged, visceral, unusual, complicated world, and that's why you can always expect the unexpected in fight sports.
Yeah. I'm in awe of these men and women. I really I'll go home on a Sunday morning and think back. You know, I was talking to Max Holloway about this week as well.
I noticed he did a lot with Max. He's wonderful, Max.
I was just in awe of the way he handled himself after that fight against
Justin Poirier. Listen, he is one of the most natural fighters. I mean, I went to Hawaii recently with Bellator last year, and they did two events there back to back, Friday and Saturday. And I didn't really get out in the hood, because I love to go into the hood.
Sure.
People might laugh at that, but the truth is, you go into the hood and you go and meet people on the ground, and they love it. And Holloway, he's just so cool. He's so natural, isn't he? He's all about his kid. He's all about his family. He's just wonderful. He's just a wonderful man to be around and talk about fights.
You can say the same about the Diaz brothers. And I understand you have an update. So the last time you were on the show, you told us about this story where you went to Stockton and you tried to find Nate Diaz.
I went all over California trying to find him.
And so since then, what has happened?
Well, it was funny, you know, because through the power of your show as well, obviously it's out at the moment. That Nate Diaz cover story on Fighters Only magazine is out at the moment. Do buy the magazine. It is out there. It's a great interview. It's a really good magazine, actually. There's interviews. There's a brilliant Daniel Strauss interview in there. If I can call it brilliant, I wrote it. But Strauss is the guy that had a motorcycle crash, could barely walk, came back recently against Shane Crookton, who's another incredible story. It's almost like the two most incredible stories in MMA fighting each other. Crookton's a guy that he's got PTSD from being a Royal Marine. He was blown up in Afghanistan, tried to kill himself. Do you know this story?
Mm-mm.
Shane Crookton, you must get him on your show. Shane Crookton, who fought Daniel Strauss recently, got beaten by Strauss. He got PTSD serving in the US, in the Marines in Afghanistan. And then, or it might have been Iraq, but it was a way back, like 10 years ago. Came back, was really depressed, got into drinking, ballooned, and had an MMA fight at heavyweight. He's a featherweight now, by the way. In his early 30s now, lovely man. Tried to kill himself, bought $700 worth of drugs from an undercover cop, went back to take the drugs to kill himself, but got busted by the undercover cop who'd sold him the drugs, who saved his life.
Wow. Yeah.
And he just kind of had an epiphany, lost 100 pounds in weight, fighting in Bellator now. He's never going to be the world champion. But he leaves his numbers on his social media as a Samaritan. Anyone can call him anytime who's going through issues.
Wow.
And he'll counsel them. It's an amazing story. And he was fighting this guy who nearly killed himself in a motorcycle accident, yeah, who could barely walk, and days in training camp he couldn't walk. The doctors told him he'd never walk again. And he was like, no. And Strauss is motivated so heavily by his daughter. I felt so inspired when I spoke to him recently. He told me about his days in prison that were just extraordinary, where he's this 5'8" guy, but he could wrestle. He went to a really good school, but he was, you know, and he was from the hood, but he went to a really good school because he could wrestle and he was able to get through the environment and people cared about him. And listen, our sport is replete with these stories. They are incredible. Everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, some of the women we interview, they're the most beautiful women, looking as well. I will say that. They're, you know, because they are physically so fit. But the souls of them, you know, I've had times talking to Jessica Eye about the issues she had with her father, and she's a beautiful human being, you know. There's so much giving in fight sports, you know, and that's why... it's a very harsh environment sometimes when things go wrong for people. And I'm not into schadenfreude. You can be at times. You can be very...
What?
Kind of cruel.
I can be cruel.
No, I think sometimes like you can. I don't think you're like that.
What do you mean sometimes?
Oh,
what are you trying to say?
I don't know. I don't want this to go the wrong way.
No, let's go. Let's go.
No.
You said it.
No, I
can be cruel.
Well, I think... What I don't like, you know the word schadenfreude.
Yeah.
I do not like it when something goes wrong for a fighter and everyone's piling on them afterwards.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
You think just I do that?
I don't know. I hope you don't.
What do you mean? You either think I do or I don't.
I think sometimes in the past I thought, wow, Ariel is really cold there over that, you know?
Which
but
case
I'm probably
are you
right. I think
about?
You've changed.
Okay.
I feel like
you're backtracking. I feel like you didn't expect me to react this way, and you don't want to tell it like it is, which is unlike you.
No, I tell you what it is.
Tell me.
I think I'm more emotional than you are.
Really? I would actually beg to differ.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
Well, I'm really pleased to hear
well, now
that.
Now you've had a stalemate.
No, I'm pleased to hear that.
Okay.
No, it's because I didn't – I think – years ago, I didn't know if you cared about the fighters as much as you do. Yeah. No, I didn't know that, actually.
Well, I go back to the Anthony Smith interview. Like, yeah.
It does change you being around them, though.
Sure.
And the older you get.
I care deeply.
Yeah, but the older you get.
I care about the fighters more than anything.
Yeah, good.
No. You know what I mean? I care about the fighters more.
I was trying to be critical of you.
No, I know. And I appreciate you bringing that up. Yeah. But I find that maybe I care about them too much. Like, at the end of the day.
No, you mustn't get too close to any of them.
No,
that's the key.
That's not what I mean. I bring up the Howard Cosell thing because I don't want to see Anthony Smith walk in there on Saturday. If he's not truly into it, I don't want to see him get knocked out. I don't want to see Roy McDonald get hurt.
Yeah,
you know, you start to care for these people as individuals. And I think that sometimes, especially with the internet, especially with social media, violence, knockout, we celebrate these things. For example, there was a great knockout last week, at PFL where Damon Jackson, right? Damon Jackson, this guy, former UFC fighter, he got nailed. He got nailed with a jumping knee. And they were really promoting it a lot on social media. And I was like, there's almost like a line.
Mm.
There's a line. Like, the guy just got brutally knocked out. He got sent to the hospital. It's sometimes it's a little too much.
Well, I was there live when Douglas Lehman knocked out Michael Venom Page recently. And it was so brutal. And Page looked really badly damaged, first of all. Like, the way he went down, he was like, I use this expression quite a lot when it happens. He did look like you dropping a shirt into a suitcase.
Right. Oh, my.
You're crumpling into a suitcase. Yeah. He looked like that,
it's scary.
And someone took that meme and they did the Thor hammer, didn't they? And it was...
I don't love it.
No,
I know,
but that's what I mean. Like, I love to hear that about you because I know... I've known you before you were a father, and I think all these things as we mature and as we grow up, we, you know... I worked very closely with a brain damaged boxer called Michael Watson in his 50s, my age, and he fought Chris Eubank, and he was horribly, he had 6 life-saving brain operations. I walked the London Marathon with him in 6.5 days it took us, actually, believe it or not, because all the lights in his brain and his house were on to get him moving, so to speak, and we had to do it over 6.5 days. I wasn't the only one that did it. We raised a few £100,000 through doing it. It was way back in 2003, and I was his ghostwriter for the journey. It was amazing. you know, famous people. Ricky Gervais came on the walk with us for a couple of hours. Loads of people joined. It was amazing. And you know, we're friends. We're spiritual friends as well. You know, he's a very spiritual man now. But he really struggles with life, even though physically, and he was such a specimen, Michael Watson. And I think as time goes on, we will see MMA fighters affected by the careers they've had, ones that have gone on too long. And I do worry about them. And you know, I mean, I love to hear the fact that you don't lose yourself or me. I never lose the fact of what I'm watching is inherently dangerous. You know, even to the point where I'm not going to scream at Derek Lewis and Francis Ngannou because they can't pull the trigger and can only throw 18 or 19 strikes in 15 minutes because they all suffer fear and nerves because they're like me and you. They're flesh and blood and bone and spirits, you know, and they are human, you know, and we all have human weaknesses and frailties. That's why I love the Paralympics, because they are at the forefront of their own physicality, because they are saying, you can cut things off from me, I may not have this, but you will not daunt my spirit. And that's what we're seeing in front of us. And the thing is, we must never lose that. And in this modern age where people don't spend as much time around the fighters, you don't get to know that, because they look like superheroes or robots, rock 'em sock 'em robots fighting there. They are human beings like you and I. They bleed, they cry, they love, they lose, they're heartbroken, they grieve. That's why we've got to really celebrate the calling that they're in.
Speaking of humans, how about Paddy Houlihan? Here's a guy who had to retire, right? Out of nowhere, he had a rare blood disorder, and he is so passionate about his people. I will be honest. I mean, I don't know intimately what's going on in Ireland, but a mutual friend of ours, P.T. Carroll, tells me a little bit about it. Paddy has certainly educated me, and he said, you know what? I need to try to fix this situation, the homelessness situation, the fact that you have people who are, you know, living, like, can't afford rent. It appears as though it's a real crisis in Ireland. So he was just elected to the South Dublin County Council on Saturday. And I think this is a wonderful story. I don't know a lot about his party. I don't know a lot about, you know, but just the fact that a guy had his career taken away from him and, you know, tried to go open a gym with his coach, John Kavanaugh. It appears as though they've had a falling out as a result of it, and has really, especially in Ireland, has really broken through, because in Ireland, as you know, MMA fighters are kind of looked down upon. And now with Conor McGregor, you know, it seems like the people are starting to turn on him. The media is starting to turn on him. And so for him to break through and to speak with the passion and the eloquence that he does is a really inspiring story. I'm impressed by this man.
Well, I remember trying to tell Paddy years ago that the best thing for him to do was create hooligan tea. Yeah, because he loves his tea.
Yes.
Yeah, of tea. And I think the brand, you know, was the thing to do. What I like about Paddy, and again, this is about being around fighters. I'm pretty sure he had a brain operation at one point as well. I think I remember a scar on his head.
Pre-UFC?
Yeah, maybe pre-UFC. I think he had, I'm pretty sure, something like that. I may be wrong on that. But Paddy's, what Paddy is someone who's utterly true to his own community. He is one of those people that will change thousands and thousands of lives by people being around him. He already does it in the gym. The reason he got voted in, I think it was the Sinn Féin party, who were obviously the political wing of what people call the IRA now. That isn't the situation anymore. But regardless, the politics doesn't matter in this. What does matter is that he's been voted into politics, into the role of a councillor, based by popular support, by the people on the ground who maybe don't even vote sometimes, or maybe haven't even voted before, voting in a guy who they believe will represent their needs and their community. And that is what being a politician is all about. It's not about furthering your own needs. You are there to serve. You are there. It's not about self. It's about service. You know, it's not about finding yourself. It's about losing yourself. Do you know what I mean? And, you know, for anyone that wants to grow as a person exponentially through their life, you can find yourself, but you know what? It's about losing yourself in others, losing yourself. And that's what he's done. And he is an extraordinary man. And I think he'll be very successful at what he does.
He's a man of the people.
Exactly. He is a man of the people. That's, I mean, he's got such charisma.
Yeah.
He's, you know, how he made Flyweight, I'll never know, though, because he's, what is he, 5'11"?
Were you there that night in
Of course I was. Well, what, when Conor fought Brandao?
Brandao.
Of course I was. I was working BT Sport.
Remains.
Working at TV.
Remains.
Up in the studio.
Remains one of the most magical nights that I've ever covered in person, right?
I mean, there have been many, but it's just...
Oh, that was special. What it was special.
Yeah, but what it is, it's such a bear pit, because... Remember that three arena?
Yeah.
That O2 arena, three arena, it's been called different things in Dublin. The shape of it is designed around, it was the turning stone for, it was the turning station for the trains at the end of the line. So it's got an unusual shape.
Oh, really?
So when the octagon was in there, there were 10 rows on one side and then a huge bank. So the noise reverberates. All the way down the giant bank of like 9,000 fans and then bounces off the wall, doesn't it? So it is, when the Irish fighters were taking part there and competing, it did sound like a jumbo jet was taking off, didn't it?
Yeah.
It's like being under a jumbo jet. It was amazing.
And it wasn't just about Conor. It was about Paddy.
That was the Paddy night. That was the Paddy night. Cartel Pundred, all those guys. Yeah.
Norman Park and Gunnar Nelson.
Exactly.
And Neil Seary.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just one after the next. They kept winning.
Well, that was the moment that I think MMA in Ireland really took off.
Of course, you know?
But look what's happened now. Though when James Gallagher in Bellator goes and fights, and now they sell it out. Everyone wants to fight him. It's almost like he's got the belt already.
Yeah.
It's brilliant.
No, I remember at the open workouts. It was in some sort of like museum or something. I don't know if you.
No, it was in the Irish Parliament.
The Irish Parliament. Yes,
yeah, yeah.
And I remember being in the courtyard and seeing kids on their bikes. And they came up and they said, like, what's going on in there? And I said, oh, Conor McGregor is having an open workout. I'm like, oh, is Conor there? And this is before Conor was Conor, right? I think at this time he had only two fights in the UFC, Max Holloway and Marcus Brimage. And they like, we like Conor McGregor. We like Conor McGregor. He gives us hope. He gives us hope. I can't believe that he's doing this. And that's when it really hit me, I think for the first time in my career, that, you know, these aren't just UFC fighters. These are cultural icons. By the way, back to the cultural icons. You never finished your story about the Diaz brothers.
So I'm covering the event in San Jose.
Yes, yes.
And it was the night Rory McDonald was fighting John Fitch. Yeah.
Okay.
And I'm just tapping out a quick report, you know, a top, as we call it, for the report on the night. And suddenly I get enveloped by these big arms that come around me in a bear hug. And I look up and I sent you the picture because someone took a picture of it. It was Nate Diaz. And he'd come on and he was like, he said, listen, man, he said, it shouldn't happen like this. We don't like it. Because he'd heard about the podcast, and I told the story, and it was like my Hunter S. Thompson, like, trip across California trying to find him. He said, we don't roll that way, man. I'm sorry that I didn't get to see you. You've got to come and do a training day with us in the Nick Diaz Academy in Stockton. And AJ Agazan was like, yeah, you got to come, man. And it's weird that... You know, because you had that homey moment with those guys, didn't you? And everyone loved that. You know, it's like one of your seminal moments in a way in your career where everyone went, oh, look at Ariel in with the boys. And they are real iconic figures now.
Yes.
As indeed you are. And they, I don't know, it was just sweet that he came over and did that. Because they are sweet people,
the
Diaz brothers. And I think he'd heard the whole story and people had passed it on to him. I don't know if he listened to the podcast, but... He clearly knew what I'd been up to, and I'd been driving around trying to find him. Well, he was texting me back, and he was genuinely sorry, you know. And he said, I don't roll like that. You know, you've got to come up and see us, and I'll text him again, and he'll have gone somewhere, I'm sure. But I think maybe this time I'll get the invite to Nick's house, and we sit around, and who knows, maybe we even have a little smoke.
Wow, that's deep. I like the fact that there's a happy ending to this story.
There's always a happy ending.
As a result of this show.
Well, thank you. Yeah, yeah. It's true that. But it's a very small community, the fight world. And those of us in it know who's who and what's what and who's put the yards in, put the hard work in. And, you know, we know those guys for long enough to know that. And he is back now, look.
Yeah.
He's coming back, isn't he? And that's what the whole story is about.
Right.
He's coming back. Everyone was telling me, I told you at the time when I told the story, AJ Agazarm, who's, you know, early in his Bellator career, who's, you know, who's supposed to be a really, really good fighter. We haven't seen enough of him yet. We're saying there's something in the air. Nate's definitely on the way back, and maybe even Nick's thinking about it, you know. So
I don't know about that one.
No, but it's exactly. But yes. but the point being, there's certain guys you want to see back.
Sure, sure.
And Nate is one of them. I want to see Nate against Conor again. I'd love to see that. It's one of the biggest.
I just
want to
see him back.
World.
But yes, I agree with you. Yeah. I agree with you 100%.
But he trains so much already. He's there most evenings. He's still training.
He's in great shape.
He's in great shape.
He misses it. And it took a while. He made a lot of money off those two Conor fights. I don't blame him for wanting to take a break, but I understand he really misses it. He's itching to come back, and he really wanted this fight. This fight means something to him. The Poirier fight didn't really mean anything to him. This fight actually means something to him. He doesn't like Pettis. Pettis doesn't like him. I like it very much. I know that you have – so last time you were telling me about that piece, you have another piece that is about to come out or has come out
just
already.
Just about to come out.
On one of the more influential people in the sport. Tell us
about
Jeff
Nowitzki's, like you are always, I think every year, nominated Journalist of the Year in the World MMA Awards. I think you won it 7 times, haven't you?
I believe 8.
Okay. But you said that. You lowered your voice and said that so modestly then. Maybe 8. It's on a vote, of course. You'll always win it on the vote.
No, I don't know.
But on a panel, it might be slightly. I should have won it at least once, twice.
Can I be honest? I actually feel like the Fighters Only Awards should just be for fighters. How about that?
No. It's good. No.
It's called Fighters Only.
Look, it's helped you develop. It's helped the industry develop. No, it's brilliant. They're brilliant. To have those awards, and
the sport is built for it.
You've won it every year apart from once, I think, haven't you?
I don't know, but the thing is, shouldn't it just be about the fighters? It's called Fighters Only.
Well, it is about fighters, but you know, it's brilliant. There's like 25 different awards, aren't there?
Sure.
20. No, it's brilliant. And Rob Hewitt, the owner of Fighters Only,
he's a very nice man. Yeah,
did a brilliant job putting all that together, and the industry needed it.
Other question about that is, why is it happening in July?
Oh, I haven't got a clue.
If it's for the previous year.
You're not
a part of it?
I'm part of the panel.
Who votes?
Who votes, oh. Yeah.
Part of the panel? Are you allowed to say or no?
No, I don't think I ought to disclose. Okay. But they're all prominent people in fight world. Okay. Yeah, fighters and journalists and... it's a good panel.
Okay.
It's a good panel. People you know well are
on it. How many people?
About 7.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you have a feature coming out on Jeff Nowitzki.
Yeah, he's nominated for leading man.
Okay.
You know, and I got in touch with Jeff.
And Jeff Nowitzki, for people that don't know, is who?
He's the drug czar, employed by the UFC, used to work for the US, what are they called? The food agent? What are they called? Something
the FDA.
Agency. The FDA, yeah.
The food golden drug, snitch.
The golden snitch. Well, I don't know about him being a golden snitch, but.
He wears a t-shirt with that on it.
Oh, does he? He's branded himself as that now.
How do you feel about Jeff Nowitzki?
Oh, I think he's tremendous.
Why?
I think he, was brought into the sport to bring a new era, and it's a very tough job. You know, let's not lie about this. Mixed martial arts was maligned with banned substances for a long time. You know, everybody knows the background to it. He was brought in to try and eradicate that from the sport. It was a very brave move by the UFC because in some ways they were shooting themselves in the foot, trying to clean up the sport, make it into a sport. Make it safer, make it more of a level playing field. Obviously, people will always cheat. There'll always be cheating in sports. But when it comes to duking it out with someone, hitting them with knees and elbows to their head and their face and kicking people, and you cannot use your body as a weapon if you've altered it by chemical means. You can't do it. It's heinous. I think it's criminal. And I think down the line at some point we will end up with a death from someone who has fought someone who's taken the wrong substances. And it probably will end up in court, and it could even end up as a manslaughter case, couldn't it? You know, a homicide, as you would say. Culpable homicide. It's a very, very difficult area with a lot of movement on the moral compass for me that, and he's doing a great job. I think he's been in the sport 4 years. I listened to his take on things, and he said, remember, he was influential. Was it Barry Bonds, the baseball player, and who was obviously caught as a cheat, and Lance Armstrong, the cyclist, who very well documented. Nowitzki was instrumental in those as part of the team, you know, working with the FBI and different people and investigating, bringing those people to justice in those terms. And what he said he found fascinating was he was very fulsome in his praise for Dana White and the team at the UFC in how pioneering they are in all areas, because it's still a very, very young sport in its infancy in many ways. But he also said he was so impressed by the fighters as people, like we've been talking about today, very similar in a way that we've been talking about how it's a privilege to be close to these people because you do admire what they're doing. And he spoke to me, and I mentioned, kind of alluded to this earlier, I didn't mention his name, but he was saying he could not believe how many very big names, and I can't name names, how many very, very big names he's been in the locker room with in the UFC just before they walk out to their music and so on, that they turn to him and they say, I'm so terrified right now. I'm so terrified. And he said, and it just makes you wonder what extraordinary people you're dealing with and what kind of pressures they face and what they're under and why they're putting themselves through this. And another thing he mentioned, which I think, this is out in this month's Fighters Only magazine, this interview, it's a 2,000 or 3,000 word interview. And he did really open up, and I really enjoyed speaking to him. He was also saying that, and this is interesting for everyone, Conor McGregor, who has only fought, what is it, fought? Has he fought once in MMA in 2.5 years? Is that right?
Yeah, since the fight against Eddie Alvarez.
Yeah, so it's once in 2.5 years. In that entire time, all the fighters, of course, certainly the prominent ones, I don't know if it's every single fighter, all the fighters who are very prominent in the sport have to label where they are 24/7, 365, and he has a 100% record of where he is. They know where he is all the time, and he is completely clean in every test they've ever done him. That's what Nowitzki told me, completely clean. And I think it's a very good sign that he is coming back. And he said, you know, there are people who are terrible, but he said there's a large number of fighters who completely adhere to the system. And he said, we always critique those who test positive, but we don't give credit for those who really do keep to the system. I thought it was very interesting to hear that about Conor McGregor.
Yeah. No, I mean, he is a polarizing figure. Is it fair to say that?
Not to me.
Not to you?
No, not really. I mean, no, because it's you cannot, if you're a drug czar, if you're the golden snitch, you're going to have, remember the sport we're dealing with. I mean, I talked to him about the John Jones case, okay, the picograms.
So he's the one on the front lines, and it kind of gets thrown on him, even though it's...
He's not a drug scientist.
I get that, but he's the one that kind of has to take the, you know, the bullets,
yeah, he's
right?
Because
Dana kind of throws it to him when he's like, speak to Jeff about it. Well, so he gets some of that heat. That's why I think he might be viewed as polarizing. For some reason, I feel like he doesn't like me. He never responds when I reach out.
Yeah, he said he didn't like me. Yeah. He said the trouble is you don't have feelings for fighters.
Right, I'm callous.
You're cynical.
But all that
we didn't talk about you. I just clarify
but,
that.
But I think it is commend. Like when they hired him, I thought it was a commendable move. I have my questions about the relationship with USADA, because how could it be truly independent if they're paying for it, right? There have been some times where you kind of think to yourself, like, wait a second. Sometimes we're doing what's best for, like, you can have this relationship with USADA, you can pay USADA, and certainly it has burned them. And I think that they got in bed with USADA. They signed USADA to come do their anti-doping, only to create this nice little package so that Lorenzo could sell the company, and now they're kind of stuck with them.
Well, there's an element of that, of course. So like, you know, like they signed up with Reebok. They were corporatizing the company. They brought in, you know, 150 executives, all those kind of things to do that.
Yes.
So with a view to selling it, you know, as you and I talked about this many times over many years, you could see the pattern of it. It wouldn't surprise me one day to see Lorenzo buy it back for $500 million. Either. Yeah. He's that kind of businessman. If they're down on their heels again, I could see him coming back. And I would welcome him back. He was brilliant for this sport. Without Lorenzo Fertitta, Dana White, maybe even Jeff Nowitzki down the line, it's so easy to criticize people over right. what they're doing. They created it. Yeah. We're benefiting from it. Yeah. Your career, my career, the great nights, some of the great nights we've had in our sports careers have been as a result of what these people have done. Without them, we wouldn't have it. So I think sometimes we, you know, obviously we have to disseminate news and we have to be critical in some ways. But I don't want to be heavily critical of Jeff Nowitzki, because what I found, and I haven't spoken to him several times, I've done workouts next to him. I've chatted to Jeff. He takes serious journalists seriously. And he, you know, I spoke to him for nigh on an hour about all of this. He told me the things he really wants in place, which is a swab that can take in the future, that just takes a blood sample from every single person that ever signs up in the whole of mixed martial arts. So you have a blood passport of everyone. That's the only way we'll move forward. At the beginning of someone's career, when they sign, you sign a blood passport. Obviously there are different ways that people could still cheat, but you sign up, you get a blood passport, and it's tested, on a template from that first test. And that's the only way. And it, listen, in 20, 30 years time, when you and I are enjoying our great grandchildren or your grandchildren, they will have so many sophisticated ways of testing. Who knows? 100 years, fight sports might be completely banned because people realize that two blows to the head can completely kind of dull your senses forever, you know, and you'll never be, you just don't know. Once you know the critical science of things, people change,
right?
You know, views change. American football, look at CTE now.
Yeah.
You know, look at things change so quickly. We don't know about our forebears were so much tougher than us because they didn't know the things that were bad for them. Do you know what I mean? You know that we see it in the evolution of man, in the evolution and woman in society. So there's nothing wrong with Jeff Nowitzki. I think he's doing a really good job. He really, you know, listen, he's working for the UFC, so he's always going to have pointed at him the fact that there could be a bias there. He's not going to bite the hand that feeds him. So he is in a difficult position in that sense. He was highly criticized over the John Jones situation. But you know what? It's fascinating, the story that he managed to get Lorenzo's jet and take John at Christmas to do a test in California. The same labs that USADA, VADA, all these guys, they use the same scientists, the same labs. So, you know, you can always...
That was Lorenzo's jet? I didn't know that.
Yeah, they used Lorenzo's jet because because Andy Foster of California, when they switched the event from Nevada to California within, what was it, a week and a half? And I felt sorry for the fans who'd bought Vegas tickets and hotels for that. That when they shifted the Jones Gustafson headliner from Nevada to California, they had to, I think it was the 24th, 25th or 26th of, it was certainly Boxing Day or what we'd call Boxing Day, 26th or something, that they had to get the test done. There was a lab open in Los Angeles, I think it was, but they took Lorenzo's jet. They picked John up in Albuquerque. I think Nowitzki had jumped in Lorenzo's jet because he'd asked Dana what he could do, and then they talked about the possibility of using Lorenzo's jet. Nowitzki jumped in a jet, went to Albuquerque in the jet, picked up John Jones. They flew to L.A. They took the blood sample. They left it with the lab. They flew Jones back to Albuquerque, back to Vegas, and
Nowitzki, all in the same day.
All in the same day. And Nowitzki told me by the time he got back to Vegas, they had the tests, that he was fine to go ahead.
The
and
results.
Have a fight. Yeah.
They
had quite amazing, eh?
It is amazing, but it makes me wonder why sometimes you have situations where the test results come out after the fight, right? If they can get it that quickly. And also, aren't the tests supposed to be anonymous?
They are anonymous.
Well, they know who they're. Oh, we have to get this rushed. It's John Jones's test.
No,
I'm being a cynic here. But
the thing is, you're right. No, someone takes the blood.
Yeah.
But then it goes into the lab. The lab scientists.
How do they get it so fast?
They're just labeled. They're numbers. They're not. Because someone got on it straight away. They opened the lab for them.
No one asks why are we doing this on Christmas Eve.
Well, look, you can surmise whatever you want to surmise. You can say the whole of fight sports is utterly corrupt.
Right.
You know, why aren't the heavyweights fighting each other in boxing at the moment? Because it's all about money.
Why are the fans being sued? Why did Khabib's teammates get a 35-day reduction
to make the the timing right for the Abu Dhabi event, because he wouldn't do it unless they were on the same card as him.
And that's why we love it.
It's all a negotiation. You
it
know?
Is.
But the fight sports has always been the wild west of sports.
It has.
You know, there's no statutory bodies. You know, there's no, the commissions for me, should have really fined. I mean, it's interesting for me. It's like, I think the commissions should probably have more power, but then when you're around it, the commissions have relationships with promoters, with fight leagues. Yes, they are statutory government bodies, but, you know, everyone loves the fight industry. They're all part of it. You know, when you're around it, people, friendships develop, and it's not always as clear cut as perhaps we would like it to be. It's never going to be perfect, Ariel. It's never, ever going to be perfect.
Let us leave it at that. It has been a pleasure.
It's always a pleasure.
It's been lovely.
Yeah, it's been really
It has been lovely. And I think we love the imperfection. We love the imperfection that is the fight game. This has been a lot of fun, my man. Mate, should I say mate? Because you're my mate, because you're British. Enjoy the coverage.
That's fine, coverage. Mate is fine.
Big weekend for the both of us. You're covering Anthony Joshua. I'm covering game one of the NBA Finals.
Oh, I know you love your basketball.
Yes, my basketball in Toronto. So
go hoop it, baby. Make it sing.
Thank you.
Make
thank
it
you,
sing.
Gareth. He is Gareth A. Davies of the Daily Telegraph, William Hill, Talk Sport, Fighters Only.
Ring Magazine. GarethAdavis.com.
Oh, my gosh. Unbelievable. A true renaissance man. A pleasure as always. Thank you for doing this. Thank you for coming
mine,
in studio. It really is so much fun to talk to you face-to-face, and I hope that we get to do it more often. I appreciate everyone who has tuned in this week and every other week. Please continue to download, rate, subscribe, comment, all those things and more. We are back Monday for our regular show, regular time and place. There is an episode of Ariel and the Bad Guy on ESPN Plus dropping in probably just a matter of hours if you're listening to this right away, but it will be Wednesday night, and then the regular schedule resumes next week. Like I said, UFC in Stockholm this Saturday on ESPN Plus and ESPN 2. There's a whole bunch of events. There's Ryzen, there's Cage Warriors, there's LFA. There's a lot going on as always, so we will have a lot to discuss next week. For now, we are out of time. For Daniel back in Bristol, for Gareth here in New York, for myself, again, thank you so much for listening. As always, enjoy the fights. Talk to you next week.